It's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 to noon show. It's nearly 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 22nd of May, 2025. It's good to have you on board, and we've got the usual mix over the next 3 hours. We'll cover some of the big issues and stories affecting our region and further afield. We'll get lots of views from our listeners and our viewers, which we very much welcome. And we'll have chats with different people about their lives, what's affecting them, maybe issues that need platforming. That's what we do every day here on the 9 till noon show. And I'll tell you how you get involved. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. And I was chatting to a few people up in Carrington, some regular listeners there on... what day was it? Monday? What day we were up there? What day is today? I don't know. Tuesday. And they were saying, oh, listen, love the show. Never text in, though. And that's fine. But I says, well, do text in. I'd love to hear your view and love to get your opinion on things, because every person's opinion is as equal as the next. No one's trumps anyone's. If I say something, I'm not elevating my view above someone else's. Everyone's view is equal. So we respect them all and love to get them all in. 07491 25000. You prefer to call. And also, too, there's an option there to send your voice notes to WhatsApp, by the way, because not everyone is fantastic at spelling or writing, and you want to get your views across, send us a voice note, 086 60 25000. And of course, you can watch the programme, as many of you do, and we do appreciate your support every day. If you work from home, living in the home, or just at home, you can open up your smart TV. Most TVs now have the YouTube app built in. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland and watch us there. Or if you have a Fire Stick, as many of you do have as well, the YouTube app is there. And we're also on our Facebook pages and on the X platform. So it's just really about giving you as many ways as possible to be involved in the programme and to consume it the way you wish to do so. The papers this morning, the Tyrconnell Tribune, cap plans, grim future for Donegal farmers. That is the red flag warning from farmer lobby groups in the suckler sector in Donegal, as the age-old tradition continues to take a real battering from several different directions. Plans emerged about the predicted cuts in the EU farm budget in 2028. They come on top of the imminent import of 99,000 tonnes of beef per year from Latin America in the Mercosur deal. These were among the big concerns across all farming interests, and the cap on nitrates is feeding into the problems being encountered across the country. Many in farming see cap post 2028 as a done deal. They are the last ones to know. Without the Western Seaboard, where suckler cattle are the industry mainstay, the fear is that any loss in the farm budget will be catastrophic, with predictions that 50% will be forced out of farming permanently. Stark warning. There's more on cap in the Farmers' Journal. I'll get to that in a moment. In the Dairy People Donegal News this morning, how much is taken in from speed vans in County Donegal? Well, it's a pretty penny, and it's coming directly out of your pockets. More than €1.5 million in revenue has been generated from fixed charge notice issued for speeding offences in Donegal since 2019. So we're 6 years on. £1.5 million, not a bad little return, is it? Figures obtained by the Donegal News through the Freedom of Information Act show £1.5 million and change in revenue has been generated from fixed charge notices for non-intercept speeding offences in Donegal Division. The revenue relates to a total of 15,150 fixed charge notices issued. The figures are based on incidents which occurred from January the 1st, 2019 to May 13th, 2025 exclusive or inclusive. In the first 5 months of this year to May 13th, a total of 2,698 fixed charge notices, the largest number in the 6 year period, were issued, generating revenue of €281,200. So that's just so far this year up until the start of May. Almost 300 grand collected in fixed charge notices. This is all from GoSafe vans. I presume the Garda figures are in addition to that. But 2,698 of us, not me, but us, caught speeding. That's a lot of speeding offences, especially considering that, you know, you'd be hard pushed to miss one of these speed vans. But the fact that so many people have been done by these speed vans, it does point to a bit of a culture of being heavy-footed, I think. And we know speed is a huge contributor to fatal collisions. So there's a lot going on in that story. Of course, you know, a lot of money, $1.5 million over 6 years out of your pockets, but also six and a half years, but also $280,000 so far this year alone. And what was it, 2,000 people caught speeding. 2,698 people caught speeding by Go Safe vans this year alone in Donegal. That's worrying, I think. The Derry News this morning, the Irish government remains committed to the 1 million ring-fenced for Derry's Northlands Addiction Treatment Centre in the January 2020 New Decade New Approach Agreement. NDNA is an international agreement between Irish and British governments and the political parties in the North, answering a written Dáil parliamentary question from AIM2 leader Paddy Tobin. Taoiseach Simon Harris said the Irish government remained fully committed to the full implementation of the agreement. On to the Irish Independent this morning, and the chief suspect for the murder of Kerry farmer Mike Gaine has insisted that he had nothing to do with his death. The suspect also refused to answer any questions put to him by Gardaí when he spent more than 32 hours in custody after his arrest on Sunday afternoon. This is according to information provided to the Irish Independent by a number of sources familiar with the reclusive murder suspect. One source said he took a no-comment stance throughout the process, which is his legal right. The suspect is back in his accommodation in Tralee and has absolutely no intention of fleeing or going anywhere at this time, the source explained. He was arrested by Gardaí around 36 hours after suspected parts of Mr. Gaines' dismembered body were found on his own land at Carrick East near Kenmare on Friday evening. Or I presume the local community know who the person is that was arrested. Obviously, on a national level or in a media sense, you can't publish that information, nor should you, until such time as the Gardaí have built a strong enough case to find whomever is responsible. But he's getting an awful lot of attention from the media. This man took a no-comment stance throughout the process, which is his legal right. Many things were put to him, but he had nothing to say before he was eventually released without charge on Monday night, the source added. However, he completely denies any involvement in this alleged homicide. The Irish Independent can also reveal that the suspect, who's aged in his 50s, has previously engaged with Gardaí in relation to the case. Mess around and find out, I think, is a situation for one member of the Kneecap band. They are a three-piece Irish language rap band. And a member of that Belfast rap trio, Kneecap, has been charged with terrorism offences. Liam O'Hanna, who performs under the stage name O'Kara, has been charged by the Metropolitan Police with displaying a flag in support of Hezbollah, an illegal organisation in the UK, at a gig in London last November. In a statement yesterday evening, the force said the 27-year-old from Belfast had been charged via postal requisition following a counter-terrorism investigation. He's due to appear at Westminster Magistrates Court on June 18th. The Met Police said Mr. O'Hanna is accused of displaying a flag at the O2 Forum in Kentish Town, North London, on November 21st, 2024, in such a way or in such circumstances to arouse reasonable suspicion that he is a supporter of a proscribed organisation. Now, this is a complex case. Very foolish, I think, for them to be waving Hamas and Hezbollah flags, given the fact that it is pretty illegal, completely illegal in the UK. That being said, there's a lot of flags knocking about. There's a lot of flags associated with organisations that are deemed illegal by the UK government that no one's going to be charged with. In fact, in the six counties, you will see flags in support of proscribed groups, as they're called, illegal groups. So, to be fair, the PSNI is going to have to be very, very busy. Or is this just one person being singled out because they have a high profile and a powerful anti-Israel voice, and they are going to be, you know, held as an example? It kind of distracts from the bigger picture, you know, waving one flag versus, you know, tens of thousands of children being killed. But what do you think? Is this a mess around and find out situation, or is it a politically motivated move to try and cancel the band, get their gigs cancelled, get them quiet. What's your views? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 074 91 25,000. I referenced the Farmers Journal. There are growing concerns that farm schemes worth over 750 million a year to farmers could be scrapped in the next cap. Farm organisations have sounded the alarm bell that the schemes funded under Pillar 2 of the CAP could face the chop on the back of EU plans to merge farmer funding into a single EU-wide budget. The schemes at risk include the ANC, which is worth 250 million euro per year, Acres, Suckler and Sheep schemes, and TAMS. However, Pillar 1 funding, which is worth approximately 5.97 billion to Irish farmers, and fund schemes such as the BISS Eco scheme, front-loaded, and the Young Farmer Scheme is not believed to be under threat, but there is certainly a pillar of that funding that seems to be very much in doubt. And one of those strange stories from the world of politics, maybe not so strange, the Irish Daily Star. A TD has been critical, or who has been critical of the government over wasteful spending, asked for a lazy boy recliner for his Leinster House office for breaks and informal meetings. Independent Ireland TD Kenneth O'Flynn has been at loggerheads with Oireachtas management over delays in getting his office fitted out since he was elected. In an email in mid-February to facilities management, Mr. O'Flynn looked for 10 separate items for his parliamentary office to enhance the workspace's comfort and functionality. That included a lazy boy recliner as comfortable seating for use during break periods and office meetings, with such seats often selling at well over 1,000. You can get them for much less than that too. But anyway, I hope now they go through all of the correspondence from all of the TDs and not just one, because that would be fairer, wouldn't it? Right, anything there that you want to talk about? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Now, I just want to mention that Donegal GAA, in association with the Donegal Business Network and Donegal Association, are hosting a summer fundraising barbecue in the Harcourt Hotel, Dublin, on Wednesday the 28th of May at 6pm with special guest Jim McGuinness. Compere for the evening is Donegal TV personality Ciara Doherty, raffles and auction on the night, and all proceeds to the Donegal GAA Team Training Fund. Tickets are limited for the event. More details on the Donegal GAA social media channels. Obviously, many of you are familiar with the Harcourt Hotel. I'm not sure, would you travel down to that? Maybe, why not? Make a night of it. Cheap accommodation, comparatively speaking, on a Wednesday night. But anyway, I know lots of you listen in from Dublin and just have to nip across the city to attend that. An email we received from a listener called Deborah. Dear Greg, could we talk about the ongoing bullying in secondary school? My son was physically assaulted today and required GP assessment for head injury and possible spinal injury because he has long hair and sometimes paints his nails. I was shown the CCTV footage of the incident, and the boy could have given my child a spinal injury. At the moment, he's bruised and he's sore. I find it disappointing and disturbing that this bullying and physical assault is taking place in our schools, also against ethnic children who are living in our community. Kind regards. So, you know, how big an issue is bullying in secondary schools? I think that the concern I have is that it can vary from school to school. I know personally some schools that are really tough on this stuff, and whomever was found to be responsible for that would face serious sanction. And you keep doing that, and it creates a culture where you're less likely to see it. Are some schools, you know, less proactive in that regard? No one, for any reason, should be treated like that. And it's horrible. And he's going to hate going to school. And it's going to affect his studies and, you know, his well-being. And so yesterday on the show, around about this time, I was chatting to Councillor Declan Meehan about certain services at Letterkenny University Hospital. And it was also covered in the newspapers yesterday that a senator had said that, a gay senator had said, that he feels less safe in this country, particularly in cities, that, you know, walking around, holding hands with his partner, less likely to do so. And this is a changing attitude. And through the conversation with Declan Meehan, teasing it out, I just wondered if, you know, the conversation that's happening very, very powerfully in the United States and Britain about the trans community is affecting all people that are in that that LGBTQ plus community, because there has to be a reason for why attitudes are changing right now. I just want to say in advance that the trans community is tiny, less than 1%, and I really genuinely wouldn't want to do anything that makes anyone's life any more difficult, especially a minority, an extreme minority group in terms of numbers is what I mean by extreme. But anyway, the conversation more generally, and it has, I mean, if it's happening, if that's the reason, we have to talk about it, right? Commentary or that conversation caught the ear of Pippa Black, who's with me on the program now. Pippa, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and it's nice to speak to you. And I was putting it to Councillor Meehan that, you know, a lot of the conversation around trans people is about, you know, women's spaces and access to women's spaces. And the Supreme Court ruling in Britain now has made that really quite clear in defining what a man is, what a woman is, and who has what access to what spaces. Or at least some people see it as being very clear. Others may not. And this sparked a message from you, Pippa. What point do you want to make?
Well, my point was actually the framing, the story that we actually hear the story a lot, that trans women might make cis women and girls feel uncomfortable. And the changing room in a swimming pool is usually the setting for this kind of narrative. Now, what strikes me is most of my trans friends and family members would actually avoid swimming altogether rather than find themselves in that horrible situation. You had someone just on before about bullying. Gender non-conforming people are at more risk of bullying and abuse and violence. So it's a really scary and horrible space for those women. So they would, as I say, they would rather not swim than deal with that kind of situation. So the solution is very simple. Modern pools have private changing cubicles, family-sized ones, individual-sized ones. Everybody's privacy should be respected. Mm-hmm. Everybody should have access to a pool. I was talking to one of my family members yesterday, and she was saying that she took her baby swimming recently, and you had to access the pool through the changing spaces. So you get to reception, and you have a choice, boys or girls. Mm-hmm. Now, how do non-binary people get to the pool and feel safe? There's no option. You just said trans is a tiny percentage, less than 1%. This is true. But 1.7% of people are intersex.
Yeah.
We've got to think about inclusion.
Yeah, of course we do. But we also have to think about everybody's rights, because there are competing rights here, Pippa.
Exactly. Everybody's inclusion.
Exactly.
So privacy. Privacy for everybody.
Yeah, but we talked then about the small amount of people that are trans women, for an example, okay? Do you believe that they should have equal access to women's and girls' spaces, you know, even if within those spaces there are cubicles? But do you believe that that's where trans women belong, in women's and girls' spaces?
I think the problem when you're talking about something like access to a public facility like a swimming pool is having to choose between women's and girls' and men's and boys' spaces. Mm. It doesn't suit a lot of people. And not having privacy doesn't suit more than just trans women. Anybody whose body differs from the norm would be uncomfortable in non-private changing. There's a lot of women who don't swim, for example, after having a mastectomy, because they can't get the privacy they need to feel comfortable. So it's not just about trans women. It's about everybody's access and privacy. If you think of a modern changing facility, the swimming pool, all genders go into the same space with private cubicles. You're not having to make that choice. That choice doesn't need to exist. It's not a problem within an individual.
Yes, but I mean, but if
it's
you're
a
talking then, if you're
fixable.
Yeah, but if you're talking then about sort of gyms, right, or you're talking about hotels, or you're talking about pubs and restaurants, you know, there's an awful lot of spaces where it's clearly, you know, a women's space and a men's space.
Yeah, we need to stop this. We need.
Yeah, but you're not. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. We're not going to have. Yeah, go ahead, Pippa.
No, I was recently in New Zealand. We have unisex bathrooms throughout towns and cities. It is possible to stop doing this binary. This court ruling in Britain is actually very dangerous for trans people. Imagine a trans man. Under that ruling, he now has to use the women's bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to get confronted as being in the wrong bathroom, he's going to be bullied, abused.
You
he's
think
going
women
to
would?
People.
Do you think if a trans man who would just so we're clear with the language and listeners understand that someone that was born a female, you think that that person would go into a women's space and be bullied and harassed?
Absolutely, a woman's going to turn around and see a man mm-hmm. in her space.
Right. So why then? So that's the experience of one trans man. Okay, who might get abused by these women in this women's space. Yes, sorry, I might misstep, but it's not intentional. What about the entire population of women who then would have to accept a trans woman, a person born a male, in their space? Why should they have to? Women's rights were so hard won, and that battle continues. Why should they have to accept this situation to effectively appease the feelings of someone who was born a man? It's another situation, is it not, of men having one up on women, even if they identify as a woman? Not being argumentative, Pippa, I just want to tease that out.
No, there's something very key that's being missed here. Trans women are women.
Mm.
We're talking about women. We're all women together. We all face discrimination together. We all face abuse and violence, largely from cis men. Now, here we go. It's not all men. Like, that's a trope. It's not all men, is it? But trans women are being vilified.
But do you think women are okay with that, Pippa? Do you think women are okay with sharing their space with trans women?
Most of us, I think we are.
Are you sure it's not a case that...
Very vocal.
Are you sure that it's... Yes, but are you sure it's not a case that women's silence is being treated as acceptance? In other words, women don't want to challenge... they don't want to challenge someone who quite often... may not pass as a woman. You know, I'm not being cruel, but that's possibly the case. Are you sure their silence and perhaps fear of confronting them is not being treated as
Look,
acceptance?
Truthfully, I object to the whole setup, the whole social setup that makes people choose. You know, a lot of trans people face bladder problems because they will not even use a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
It's too fraught and difficult. So they hold on till they get home. And we're not thinking, we're not being inclusive, we're not being a caring society when we make these distinctions. And
I think we're
better than that.
Most people, even removing sort of the trans people from the conversation, you know, I think most people want their own spaces. I don't particularly want to be going into toilets with women in, and I'm sure most women listening don't really want me going in there. Even if there's cubicles.
If there's a long queue, I will go into a men's toilet.
Well, I've seen that too. Not you, Pippa, but I've seen that. Okay. So, obviously...
The binary choice is ridiculous.
Obviously, you know... part of this as well is about what is a trans woman. In Britain, that's kind of being defined. In Ireland, it's almost that you can self-declare, right? And there is hoops to jump through, but it's quite simple. But for you, what makes someone who's born male a trans woman? You know, do they have to be going through hormone treatment? Do they have to have, you know, gender affirming care? Or is it simply someone who feels they're a woman?
I think my background is sociology. So I kind of had for a long time the idea that sex is biological. It turns out that biological sex isn't binary, it's bimodal because we have this 1.7% intersex. The topic of my dissertation at the moment is the intersex, right? So it's not actually binary, but okay, sex is biological. Gender is a social construct. And what was missing in my paradigm is that there's another side of gender, which is psychological. It's internal to the person. And you know who you are. You know if you're a man or a woman or neither.
Mm-hmm.
You know that in your core. And that's what makes a person trans, when who they know themselves to be doesn't match what they were assigned when they were born.
Yeah. But I mean, we have to also work in the construct that we have male and female spaces. So,
we're not born 100% male and female.
No, I understand.
You know what
I do understand
doing.
That, of course. No, but
we're
my point
been doing
is
surgeries on babies, intersex babies, to make them conform to this binary that's not a biological reality.
Well,
we've got to stop thinking this way.
So, Pippa, We do have men and women's toilets for the most part, right?
We do.
And there are
we
unisex toilets, and yeah, so that's the way it is. So that's the space we have to. That's the structures that we have, right? We can't even get a toilet in Letterkenny for people to go in and use a public toilet. So to think that we're going to end up revolutionising the way we have toilets is a long way off. From what you're saying, Pippa, is that somebody who actually may present male, but with every core of their being, they believe they are female, okay? You are of the view that they can walk in and use the female changing facilities at all Relesha Centre. Do you understand how some people might have a difficulty with that?
Well, again, I would prefer that everybody had privacy.
Yeah, but that's not the way it is. That's not the way it is. That's not the way it is. So you've got young girls and women, and according to your belief system, Pippa, that person can actually present masculine or male, but if they believe within themselves that they are female, they can go into the women's and girls' changing room in the Oral Leisure Centre. Do you understand how that's too much for some people?
Yes, but you're locating the problem in the individual, and it comes with this kind of wolf in sheep's clothing narrative, which is very unfair to trans people who are more likely to be bullied than be a threat.
Yes, but the people who are most likely to be a threat, but Pippa, the people more likely to be a threat, right, are mm-hmm. perverted men
yes,
who are adopting that identity. You see, and why should women have? Why should women have to roll those dice? Pardon?
There's no evidence. I mean, Derek Meehan was pretty clear on that yesterday too. There's no evidence that that has ever happened.
There's no evidence that. Yeah, but
people posing as trans.
But you're asking that's a big leap of faith. You're expecting for an awful lot of women and girls and their partners, if they're male, who might have concerns. That's a big leap to say, well, it hasn't been a problem yet.
Alternatively, you're limiting access and inclusion for a whole group of people based on a fear of something that has actually never happened.
Yeah, but conversely, you're also asking half of the population to accept themselves feeling uncomfortable for that very small group of people who mm. want to use those spaces.
Rosalie McDonough wrote a fantastic article about public bathrooms where she said, trans people are welcome in my accessible bathroom. And I think that's it. It's the real question here is accessibility.
Yeah.
How do we make everybody feel safe and comfortable?
But for looking into it, like sort of not my understand, and I mean, listen, obviously, in a program like this, I'll look into certain things. Some very vocal trans people, like India Willoughby, for an example, and there are others as well. They don't want gender neutral toilets or changing facilities because that's not gender affirming. They want to be able to access women's spaces, so. You know, that's coming from the trans community themselves. They want to use spaces
of, yes.
that members of. They want to use facilities that affirm the gender that they feel, and gender neutral toilets don't do that. So they're opposed to that, and that's from some members within that community. Those members actually with quite a high profile.
Obviously, there are other members in that community who are themselves non-binary, and if there wasn't a choice of male or female, that particular objection goes away, because there is nobody using female toilets and there is nobody using male toilets because they don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think this is all going? Because there does seem to be a major pushback in relation to this, you know, gender affirming care for young people.
Oh gosh, we need that so desperately.
Really,
and,
though, are you sure, Pippa? That's the right thing to
ban. It's really scary. Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. It's life-saving.
Yeah, but also too, you know, you talked about where mixed, you know, we're kind of a little bit male and female. Fellas, you know yourself, fellas, when they're 8, 9, 10 as part of puberty, they might grow breasts, you know, small breasts. They might even lactate a little. You know, girls, what may traditionally have been known as tomboys, you know, does that exist anymore or in the same way, or are people now sort of saying, all right, okay, well, you must be a boy, or saying to that guy, that young lad, oh, you must be a girl, and taking tablets that are going to potentially affect the girls' fertility if they change their minds, and also affect the boys' development of the boys' genitalia. How can we, as a society, think that's the right thing to do?
Well, this picks up on another one of these anti-trans narratives, which is that somehow, at the slightest whim, other people are defining the gender of young children. This is not how this works. It is young children themselves who know who they are.
But you can't know who you are at that age, Pippa. You can't. We as adults have to help guide people till they're 16, 17 and 18, but particularly as adults, and then they can make their own decisions. How could we allow an 8 or 9 year old to defer their puberty, right, and affect their potential?
Deferring puberty is safe.
It's not. Are you saying there is no risk to potential female reproduction? And are you also saying that it doesn't stunt or harm the growth of a boy's genitalia by taking puberty blockers?
It's reversible. I've actually researched this. If you look at what for 20 years now, the family court in Australia has been supporting the use of puberty blockers. This isn't a new technology. We've got data and statistics and stories and evidence that it is safe, it's reversible. Going through the wrong puberty is life-threatening.
What does that mean, going through the wrong puberty? Is like,
If you feel that you're a boy and you go through female puberty, it's very, very bad for mental health. It has caused people to commit suicide.
Of course.
That's putting it very broadly.
But there's also many people. And you will know. There's a very vocal detransitioning community who say their lives have been ruined by given puberty blockers. What about their voice?
That is a very small minority who regret transition. Fine with their process.
But Pippa, it's just everything that goes against your belief system. You minimise, if you know what I mean.
No, I've read the data.
I'm not questioning
what's
that.
What's actually happening is that the exception is being used to affect everybody, in, as if it's a rule. And this is a problem. Mm. It's actually an anti-trans rhetoric.
This is a conversation, not about being anti-trans, right? Because I understand exactly what you mean by that. This is a conversation, as far as I'm concerned, about making sure that we, who are the one single thing that we have that is of any consequence, is protecting children, in my view. We have to make sure that what we're doing is actually the right thing. The right thing. And to say that puberty blockers, their effects are reversible, is not actually clinically proven that that is the case. There's opposing medical views on in relation to that, i.e. how it affects people's bones, how it affects people's reproductivity.
Osteoporosis is one of the genuine concerns.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's what I've just referenced. I mean, I don't mean it funny, but there's there's an awful lot of I was watching some of the a recent protest, a pro-trans protest, and there seems to be a massive overrepresentation of trans people using sticks or what have you as well. Like, are we sure in our rush to be inclusive, are we sure that we are doing the right thing for people? That's my concern.
Well, the physicians who prescribe puberty blockers are aware of the bone density issues. Usually once the person comes off the puberty blockers, it resolves itself. Mm-hmm. But they're monitoring it, they're checking bone density,
but we're talking
about
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. We're not talking about 30-year-olds. We're talking about little kids, right?
But we're only talking about puberty blockers at that age. We're talking about buying a young person time to make an informed decision for themselves rather than sending them down an irreversible path of the puberty that's going to happen if you don't step in. Okay, I mean, that does have to be then corrected later with much more extreme interventions than just buying a little bit of time.
Yeah. All right, okay. And as well, too, you know, there are, people that are undergoing surgery, bottom surgery, and also, you know, top surgery for male to female transitions. And, you know, the outcomes are not medically sound. If you know where I'm coming from, there are serious issues.
Again, we're coming back to an informed consent, aren't we? It's very important that people who undertake any medical procedure are fully informed of the risks and consequences, and they take it all together and they look at what they need for their lives and they make their own decisions. And as a society, we've always supported people to do that.
Okay, listen, Pippa, lovely chatting to you. Thank you for your time. I do appreciate you getting in touch with us and taking our call when we called you back. What's your views? 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. You can call us too on 07491 25000. This is another one of those stories that are just is just absolutely sickening. Mary Boyle is chair of Fulcarra Tidy Towns, and she's with me now. Mary, how are you keeping?
I'm very well, Greg. Thank you.
Once, maybe idiotic behaviour. Twice, I don't know what you'd call it, but three times, it sounds like someone has an agenda here. We're talking about new young trees being planted in Fulcarra. And again, they've been uprooted. What's the history of this?
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on, Greg. These trees were planted, first of all, in mid-March. They're 40 silver birch trees. And they were planted by ourselves in Coshed Lanagas Glass, which is the Tidy Towns team in Fulcarra, along with our CE scheme workers. And we also had the Green Schools team involved. That's the local primary school in Scotland. So we had a group of about eight children and the principal there. They're on their ninth green flag at the minute, and they do a lot of work for the environment within the community and the school. So we planted them in mid-March. And so there were little saplings, they're silver birch. We planted about 40 silver birch trees. And they were coming along okay. We were keeping an eye on them. And green leaves had been forming. And then on Saturday, the 3rd of March, some of the Tidy Towns, or 3rd of May, I beg your pardon, some of the Tidy Towns team just had a look, and they noticed that about 36 of the trees had been pulled out and just left beside the hole that they had been placed in originally. So they diligently put them in again, and we were, because there were there's a danger of them being distressed and that they were young saplings, we were watering them every day, sometimes twice a day. And so they were placed in on the Tuesday. And on Saturday, one of our committee members noticed that they were had been pulled out again a second time and left in bunches this time, you know, group of about 20 in each two groups. And so they were put in that very day and watered again, sometimes twice a day because of the heat and the good weather. And just the day before yesterday, they had been watered at 10 a.m. And when the Tidy Towns members went down to water them after 7, they had been pulled out again.
So, you know, those that are responsible for this, those are responsible for planting these, they're trying to improve and make Fulcarra even more beautiful than it already is, free. You know what I mean? No one's getting paid for this. This is community driven. So this is effectively a two-fingered salute to the community. Now, Mary, especially the way they were bundled and the fact that this has happened three times now, unfortunately there is an individual or individuals in the community or coming into the community that are actively ripping these trees out. So you can't continuously have this battle of planting these trees, then being lifted, planting these trees, being lifted. So what do you do? Like, you can't either be controlled by this person's actions.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, the trees don't look too healthy.
No.
Anyway, we were just sort of thinking that they mightn't do anyway. We were just keeping them watered in the hope that they would sort of.
But they've been too distressed at this stage, I think.
They have been too distressed. But I must say, Coshublan Gislas have been working diligently in the Fulcarry area for over 17 years, and we've got nothing but cooperation and help and good support from within the community. So this has never happened. The likes of this has never happened. And so somebody obviously doesn't want the trees there, and we don't know why. Now, we're all locals. It's a very small community. So what we're going to do now is we're not putting the trees back in a fourth time. We are going to, just as a temporary measure, we're putting wildflower planting, wildflower flower seeds there for this season anyway. And maybe the person would talk to us if, you know, there was some reason. As I say, it's not blocking anything. It's only going to enhance the area. And it's also a part of our heritage and tree trail. We have, our committee has recently secured finance through the CLAR scheme to develop a tree and heritage trail taking in the town and a local woodland in Ballyconnell. And this was to be one of the stops on that trail. So it's disappointing from that point of view as well. So we would just like to know why it's been done. We have no idea in the world who did it. And we would just like if whoever did it might come forward and talk to us and say why they don't want the tree.
Email falcaritidytans at gmail.com. But, you know, if anyone has the information in relation to this as well, because it's terrible, I think, that these plans are having to be scrapped for a year at least. Like, is it messing about? Is it horseplay? You know, maybe you don't realise what you're doing and the inconvenience it causes. Or maybe you're opposed to this type of plantation. But either way, you can't have this sort of cat and mouse situation, because what's next that you might do, Mary, that this individual or individuals might do? Or is it that there's a kid that walks along there and doesn't know any better and thinks it's a game? It might not seem the most important thing in the world, and clearly it's not, but it's a bind, because now you can't do this again. This is the third time, and the trees are damaged now beyond beyond saving, I would imagine. But it's something that needs to be gotten to the bottom of, or else, you know, are they going to frustrate the group on the next thing that you try to do?
Well, it'll not stop us doing what we're doing.
Of course, yeah.
What we're doing is enhancing the area, and you know, we're a positive group. We'll move on from this, and hopefully, we'll have trees planted there in the future. We'd like to know why. We get advice from Sean O'Geehan. We're extremely lucky to have Sean O'Geehan, who's the head gardener in Glenveagh, working among us here in the Fulcarra community, and he guides us on many projects. And, you know, Sean advised us that silver birch would look nice in there. And, you know, a lot of work had been put into that site, and we went to a lot of expense in preparing it. There were old pine trees there, some of which were dead. They'd been there for years, and we took them out. And, you know, taking down old trees
And it's very expensive, it's difficult, and it's a professional job.
We've got a lot of work in there. We had a mini digger in to you know, prepare the ground and put fresh soil in, and then put in the trees. So you know, we still carry on doing what we can for the environment and for biodiversity. This is a bit disheartening.
Okay, well, listen, Mary, we hope whomever's responsible has a crisis of conscience. They can email falcaritidytans@gmail.com or us. Contact us and let us know what's going on. Or maybe someone's discovered someone in their house is doing it and they think it's horseplay. I don't know what the solution is, but keep it up. Fulcarra is beautiful. I know you're all working in the same direction on the Tidy Towns Committee. Keep us obviously in the loop for anything positive we can plug for you as well, Mary. I don't want our only interaction for a while to be a negative one. But thank you very much for your time and accepting our call. I appreciate it greatly.
Thank you
very much indeed. Okay, a caller says, I'm busy on the phone lines again today. Thank you. A caller says, good morning, Greg. Sorry to hear about that woman's son getting bullied in their school. I know of two boys who sexually assaulted a girl. These two boys' repercussions were nothing. They were even allowed to go on the school trip. The girl left the school. The boys are still there. Now, that is incredibly worrying, because what's going to check that behaviour? If there seems to be no consequences, why would you not do it again? A caller says, I totally agree. It's not just secondary schools, though. It's rife in national schools, and not always by the fellow students. So many times it's the teacher who picks on the child and makes their life a nightmare. Well, no one should feel, and I know this myself, you know, when you're young, you're going through those doors, you just you feel so alone at times. And if your school life is difficult, it's very, very difficult as a young person to deal with. And a lot of the times you bottle that up, and we just need to do as much as we can to make sure that it's a happy and safe, productive place for our young people. On a different note altogether, I'm with Three. That's the phone network. And my mobile data hasn't been working for the past 3 days. I'm still charged. Every time I contact Three, they say they can't help me. I've been to the shop and they tell me to ring phone numbers. The numbers don't end up answered. Now, were you in the north? Because there is a quirk of mobile phones that sometimes if you were roaming, that how it accesses its data, how do I explain this? In the data settings, it's like... instead of it being data dot whatever, it's MMS dot whatever, right? So if you were in the north or what have you, go into the mobile data settings, go to access points, and just make sure it's on data and not MMS. It probably isn't that, but there is a little bit of a quirk there with some of those networks. If you go into the north and out, it switches from data to MMS. So maybe it's that. Let us know if that helps at all. Back with more after the news and obituary notices.